And welcome in to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's what we do at Veritas Medical. Check out that website, VeritasMedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, Wade. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Ready for the holiday and going to have to watch the calories and maybe eat as clean as possible. I don't know.
It's a time to feast. Feast on good.
Feast on good quality food.
That's exactly right. Fasting has its benefits, but feasting has its benefits too. But the main thing is we've got to eat God food, not man food. How did God originally intend this thing to operate? And that's what we need to discern and then pursue. Thinking about how the world is right now, we have not stewarded creation righteously. I mean, God gave it to humans to run, to operate, to manage it, to steward it. And he said, take dominion and subdue creation, the land, air, and water, and everything in it. Interesting, he did not say, take dominion over your fellow man. That's a whole other conversation. I don't want to get too political here. But we haven't ruled righteously over creation. We've made decisions for the benefit of the pocketbook, the love of money, and trying to be our own provision, our own security, our own protection. We have this orphan mentality. We got to do it all ourselves. We don't know who we are. We don't know we're a child of the king. So we make all these decisions based off a self-centered mindset. And look at where it's gotten us. And you can look at any industry, medical, government, agriculture, banking, you name it, all of it. We're in a mess. So today we're talking about food, and we're talking about high quality food produced the right way, God's original intent kind of way. And specifically, we're going to talk about grass-fed beef versus grass-finished beef versus just conventional beef. And I want to start this conversation by reminding everybody that the diet heart hypothesis, which is a hypothesis that Ansel Keys came up with back in the late 1950s, early 60s, and his hypothesis was saturated fat in the diet caused heart attacks. Here's a quote from George Mann, MD, professor of nutritional and a nutritional biochemist, Vanderbilt University. He was also an internist, and he was the associate director of the Framingham study, which medical folks know what that is. It's a huge ongoing study for many decades now. But here's a quote. A generation of citizens has grown up since the Ansel Keys diet heart hypothesis was launched as official dogma. They have been misled by the greatest scientific deception of our times, the notion that consumption of animal fat causes heart disease. And that quote was from July 1985. There have been multiple review studies, the latest being, let me pull it up here real quick, I think it was 2019. But multiple studies, a review study is when you look at all the literature produced on a subject and you kind of average out the results and you draw your conclusions. So they have done this with the diet heart hypothesis, this thought that heart disease comes from cholesterol consumption. So this is the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, Volume 76, Issue 7, August of 2020. The name of the article is Saturated Fats and Health, a Reassessment and a Proposal for Food-Based Recommendations. Journal of American College of Cardiology. Here was their conclusion. Several foods, now this is a review article, they went back and reviewed all the literature on cardiovascular disease, cholesterol, saturated fat, and heart attacks. Several foods relatively rich in saturated fatty acids, such as whole fat dairy, dark chocolate, and unprocessed meat, are not associated with increased cardiovascular disease or diabetes risk. There is no robust evidence that current population-wide arbitrary upper limits on saturated fat consumption in the United States will prevent cardiovascular disease or reduce mortality. The last, there's a little graphic in this article. I encourage people to go look at it. Again, it's a Journal of the American College of Cardiology, August 7th, 2020. Health effects of saturated fatty acids depend on the interacting effects from naturally occurring food components and from unhealthy compounds introduced by processing. Translation, man food. When man puts his hand on it and starts manipulating, doing, you know, what's right in his own eyes with his own wisdom, usually influenced by cost and convenience, productivity, profit margins, all that. But this article specifically points out that the food's healthy. It's the unhealthy compounds introduced by processing, what man does to it. That's the problem. And there's many other review articles. I'm not going to spend more time going over that. I've done an entire lecture on this, probably an hour and a half long video. It's on our website under Video Archive, First Tuesday Talks from this summer. Go back and watch that if you want all the details of the diet heart hypothesis. We've got a guest in studio, and he's got pages and pages of notes to educate our audience. Jeffrey Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ben.
Really appreciate you being here. I want you to start and just introduce yourself to the audience as much or as little as you want, because I know you got a lot you want to get into to educate folks, and I really appreciate that. But I want them to know kind of where you came from and how you got to where you were to where you are in your career, but in your mindset, in your thinking, in your operation that you have now.
Very well, Ben. Well, I grew up in Linn County, farming and ranching with my folks. I spent much of my career in the oil industry. In 1999, I did something that I've always wanted to do. I wanted to. I'd been involved in the cattle business since with my folks since I was 11 years old, and I bought a Peterbilt and a cow trailer, and I started hauling cattle. And for the next 6 years, I drove 600,000 miles wow. hauling cattle from all over from the hill country to wheat fields and to feed yards, and. Because I wanted to learn all the different aspects of the cattle industry, it led me to a discovery that launched me on a two-decade-long quest to grow healthy beef. Mm. I was, I guess it was in 2003. I delivered some cattle up north of Hereford, and I was waiting to be unloaded, and I looked up, and I was seeing a big front-end loader loading the mill as they were getting ready to feed all the animals, all the beef cattle. It was about 250,000 head in that particular feed yard. And as this big front-end loader was scooping this white substance and dumping it and going into the mill to mix the ration, I asked the fellow that was unloading, I said, "What is that?" He said, "I don't know. You're going to have to ask somebody else." So whenever I got my weight ticket and left the feed yard, I asked someone there at the yard, and they said it was baking soda. I said, "What in the world are we doing feeding baking soda to our animals?" Mm-hmm. And so I started my learning that a cow is a ruminant. They have four stomachs. And the... they're designed by our Creator to eat grass and grass only. And but in the 50s and 60s, due to the massive surplus of wheat produced at the end of War II, didn't have any place to go with all the corn and all the grain that this country was producing. So the birth of the confined space livestock feeding industry. Now, I'm not here to badmouth that part of the industry. It's the commercial beef industry. It's established. It's, you know, it's a big apparatus. Mm-hmm. But I'm a niche producer because I like animals that are healthy. I like animals that are happy, mm-hmm. and animals that are fat.
Yeah.
And you can't do that on grain and not the correct way. I had the opportunity to haul some of those big 1,200-1,300-pound animals, and they were all mean. They'd get you, and they'd tear up your trailer and everything else. So what I discovered was that they were all hurting. Mm. Why? Because of the large intake of grain or carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
They were in acute or subacute acidosis. Mm. And Can you give us the definition of acidosis, Dr. Ben?
That's when you're just a touch on the acidic side.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The pH of the rumen of a cow falls between 6.5 and 7. Mm. And the more carbohydrates you put in there, it starts dropping that pH. As you drop that pH down to 5.7, 5.8, the rumen stops moving. The temperature rises and kills all of the beneficial microorganisms, the flora in the ruminant. It's like a giant fermentation vat.
Mm-hmm.
And what is left is all the bad bugs. Mm-hmm. And they begin to work on the lining of the rumen, and it sets up inflammation. And so there's only one way you can do that when you're feeding 250,000 head of cattle. You got to put antibiotics in the feed to keep them from being miserable and being sick.
And you're baking soda.
And so the answer was to fix the acid.
Yeah.
Was baking soda.
Yeah.
The largest purchaser of baking soda in the United States is the confined space feeding industry.
Wow.
And by the railroad car.
Talk about treating a symptom, as we're trained in medical school to do with human beings.
Exactly.
Instead of, wait a minute, let's analyze a problem, get to the root of it, and let's correct it that way. We'll just put this big old Band-Aid of baking soda into the mix and antibiotics, but go ahead.
And so with the antibiotics to keep the animals from being sick, well, now then you've got this animal that's just nearly bloated, or he's all swollen up and he's pretty miserable. So what else do you have to do now that he doesn't want to eat? You've got to put something else into him. It's called a growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that has major drawbacks, and we won't get into that unless you wanted to. But I said, well, I remember how we'd raise cattle at home with my dad. And they were grass-fed.
Mm-hmm.
They were pasture-fed. But we started feeding range cubes, cow cake, as it was called, and I didn't know any different, but I do now. And so there is a major, major difference between grain-fed and grass-fed, and then the superior grass-finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll get into all those different labelings and how people need to be careful, and ultimately just need to know the producer. But so let's go back to that cow in the feedlot, eating all that grain, corn, soybean, whatever else they feed it, the baking soda, antibiotics, growth hormone, they're managing this whole thing. What? Who cares? I mean, for the consumer, what's that mean for that meat going into a consumer's mouth? Health-wise, what's wrong with that meat?
Well, first and foremost, before we get to that, that meat is marbled. It's beautiful with fat ingrained into the meat. And you can only obtain that by grain finishing an animal. That's how you get that good layer of back fat, how you get that marbling.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a slice of back strap off of a deer that was marbled up like a ribeye.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
And grass-finished beef is 42%, up to 40% leaner than grain-fed. And so your original question was what again?
What is that cow in that confined operation being managed this way? What does that meat look like to the consumer and from a health perspective? How does all that baking soda, antibiotic growth hormone, grain fed, how does that change the meat to an unhealthy meat for the consumer?
Well, in 1900, I'll quote a famous doctor I know by the name of Edwards that said that the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio of the average American was 1-to-1, omega-6 to omega-3 ratio in their body. As of 2014, the last I knew, that ratio is now at 24. It was, at then was 24-to-1, omega-6 to omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
Omega-6... As you know, being a physician, that it supports and even creates inflammation in the human body.
Mm-hmm.
Omega-3 is a canceling agent.
Yep.
That's why the ideal ratio for a human being should be 1-to-1. If that be true for a human, it's that true for a beef cow.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you feed an animal lots of grain, he's going to have a high level omega-6. you have a high level omega-6, and I eat that animal, it's just passed right down the line.
Yeah.
Now, grain-fed, corn-fed beef is beautiful. It's got a bright red color, white fat, tender, has a real mild flavor. Steak sauce was not even created until the feeding industry began, because beef used to have a Western beef flavor when it was grass-fed or grass-finished, pasture-fed. But it was so mild, this created what is called steak sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go to a nice restaurant, order steak, and they say, they ask my wife and I, you know, what kind of steak sauce do you want? And I said, I better not need these steak sauce. I'm not going to pour ketchup on a $50 ribeye. So, besides the hormones, the antibiotics, there's multiple antibiotic-resistant strains that are alive in three notable that are alive in commercial beef today. And in grass-finished beef, there's zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so that beef steak has its drawbacks.
Yeah.
And
just for the listener real quick, I want to remind them that omega-6, omega-3, inflammation in and of itself is not always bad. I mean, we need to be able to trigger and fire up that inflammatory cascade in certain conditions, like to kill a pathogen, kill a germ. When you get a germ into you, you need to fire up your inflammatory pathways to burn that germ down. Or when you've got an injury, you've got old dead cells or bruised, damaged cells, and they need to be recycled, basically. You've got to go into the inflammatory cascade to deal with the dead, dying, injured cells and tissues in the body, because we're constantly recycling ourselves. But we flip from this pro-inflammatory state to an anti-inflammatory state, and it's a beautiful balance the way the body does that. So thus, we need the balance of omega-6, omega-3. And when you're extra heavy on the omega-6, you tend to just stay in this pro-inflammatory state. You get stuck, so to speak. You can't flip into the anti-inflammatory state as easily. So it's not either or. It's not, hey, omega-6 is horrible, awful, we never need to consume it. It needs to be balanced. And the beautiful thing, you don't have to worry about, I mean, our great-great-grandparents didn't know any of this. They didn't know about these ratios. They didn't know about all this different stuff. Back when everything was organic, grass-fed, grass-finished, pasture-raised, non-GMO, all the labels that we hunt out now and seek out for health and pay a high dollar for, that's the way humans have eaten since the garden until recently. And now we've got to go jump through all these hoops to go figure out, you know, how can we get down to just real food that like our great-grandparents ate. So they didn't know these ratios, so that's the beauty of it. You can just trust the design. That's what I'm always talking about, God food versus man food, God's original intent. Let's get back to doing things the way he intended, and then we don't have to worry about it. You can trust the body and trust the design. If you give it what it needs and avoid what it doesn't, it'll function. So just give it real food. Give it God food. It's awesome, and it takes pressure off. You and the doctor both. That's why the name of our show is You're the Cure. Your body will fix itself if you give it these things, and this beef thing is huge. All right, so if you consume the grain-fed omega-6 rich, you're going to be omega-6 dominant. People know about omega-3s because we hear about fish oil and eat salmon and all that, and that's fine. Wild-caught salmon's great. It has its own health benefits. But there's as much or more omega-3 in a grass-finished roast than there is in a piece of salmon. So one of the biggest misconceptions is beef is not healthy, saturated fat's not healthy. So we're here to end that myth today and to encourage you to know your producer. There were some other things I know that you had down that you wanted to educate our audience on from a health perspective, or maybe we can go into that labeling, because this grass-fed thing is such a kind of a hot item, and people can throw that label on something and charge a few more dollars. And so what's grass-fed mean when they see it on a package at the grocery store?
Okay. There is a major difference, as we've discussed, between grain-fed and grass-fed. But there is just as large a difference between grass-fed and grass-finished. Grain-fed means that the animal started out on grass, on its mother's milk, And then at weaning weight, around 400 to 450 pounds, that animal can then be finished out on grains. And so the majority of its life, because that first 8 to 10 months, it's grass-fed or it's on pasture. And then the remaining portion of that animal's life, you can put a label on that says grass-fed. But if it says grass-finished, that means that animal from birth to harvest ate nothing but grass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you wind up with 6 times more omega-3 in that grass-finished meat than you do in grain-fed, or 3 times as much omega-3 as in grass-fed.
Mm. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Well, and I read an article last week, FDA just approved some company, I think in California, to start producing this synthetic chicken. And it's coming, guys. It's coming to the beef. All this fake meat, lab-grown meat, genetically modified, engineered. People are asking me, the mRNA technology, is it going to be in stuff? Yeah, there's patents out there. There's research being done to utilize that mRNA technology in our food. So now more than ever, it is important to know, where does your food come from? Know your producer. Know how that animal was treated and maintained and stewarded, and spend the extra dollars. But actually, it turns out, if you're purchasing in bulk, which I highly recommend, buying a half of beef, quarter beef, whole beef, don't quote me exactly, but a lot of these producers around here I've talked to, it'll average out at, I don't know, $4 or $5 or $6 a pound, something like that. Am I right? On that?
Mine are averaging out about $5 and a quarter a pound from everything from soup bones all the way up, you know, including your ribeyes.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't beat that.
No.
$5.50, even if it was $6 or $7, based off what's at the grocery store.
Correct.
So from a food security standpoint, a freezer full of beef, but then just from a cost standpoint, you're actually saving money, which... Well, we got a couple minutes before the break, and I'm going to tell the audience, Mr. Taylor, he is not here. He did, he reached out to me, and he's a former patient. We might talk about that too, because he graduated.
Yeah.
Into health, and that's our goal: get healthy and go live your life and be who God made you to be, and don't need a doctor. But he reached out when we opened the Merck. He heard about our offering of local products, including beef, and he just wanted to make sure that we were getting the right stuff in there, which we are. And we've had other producers on, too. And there's so many great producers around here that understand the way to do things. And we're blessed in Lubbock. There's full-blown operations like Canyon Valley out of Garza County. We've had Jessica and Austin Ham on before. We've had Holy Cow Beef on, Weldon and Ann. And there's others out there. And we're happy if you're a producer and you want to visit with us. Our goal at the Merck, our new store down here, is to connect the consumer to the producer directly. We do have a few cuts in the store to sell, but really we want you to take the business card of that producer and call them up and say, hey, next year can I get a half a beef directly from you? And I know you have some available too. And he didn't do this to advertise. And in fact, he kind of hesitated when I asked, can I mention you've got some beef? Because he's not here to sell stuff. He's here to educate. But I do want folks to know it's available. From Jeffrey Taylor or others around here, and you just contact us at the Merck and we can hook you up. There are enough consumers in Lubbock, Texas to buy out every single producer around here. So there's no competition in the kingdom. There's a lack of knowledge that people are being destroyed from this lack of knowledge. So we're here to bring the knowledge and truth and then connect these folks. So, but I do, right before the break, I want you to just maybe share a little bit more about your operation if people do want to contact you.
Well, Glenda and I at Taylor's Natural Beef, we strive to make sure that our animals stay in single custody from me, and I deliver them actually to the arbiter to have them slaughtered, so that I know exactly what that animal eats from its birth till harvest. I invite any and all of my customers. I actually request them to come to my place and pick out the very animal that they want to have on their dinner table.
Wow.
And so so that they can see how they're fed, how they're treated, what they drink, and what they eat, where they live, and who takes care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's vitally important today, you know, because of the labeling has become so arbitrary. It's difficult.
Right.
And now there are organizations to help in that, but as far as my organization, I'm small. I just have a small place, but I have loyal customers, and anyone that would want to contact me for Taylor's Natural Beef, I invite that.
What's the best way to contact you?
Jeffrey Taylor, 806-543-9826.
All right. Y'all check that out. Call Jeffrey anytime. He's a genuine real deal. If you want some good grass-fed, grass-finished beef.
Grass-finished. Yes. Yep. I'm not grass-fed. I'm grass-finished.
Grass-finished. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back at it with a little more knowledge to help you steward your health. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's what we do at Veritas Medical. And be sure to check out VeritasMedical.com.
All right. Thank you, Wade. We're right back at it with Jeffrey Taylor. First, I want to go through a few more studies just to drive home the point. You do not need to be scared about high cholesterol and saturated fat. Every single week I have a patient ask me about their cholesterol, because all these labs, Quest, LabCorp, all of them, flag cholesterol total and LDL. They flag it high if you're above 200 or above 100 on the LDL. Now, to go through and explain to them, all this started, I'm looking at the Time magazine cover of the Time magazine, January 13th, 1961. And on that cover is physiologist Ansel Keys. He was a nutritionist, came up with the K rations in World War II, so kind of a national hero. President Eisenhower had his heart attack. Everyone turned to Ansel Keys for the answer. And he said it's the saturated fat. And then he produced a study called the Seven Country Study that showed the more saturated animal fat a country consumes, the higher rates of heart attack they have in that country. What he failed to do was show you the complete data. It was really a 22-country study. He just threw out those other 15 countries that did not fit his theory and his hypothesis, including France, which had the number one highest saturated fat consumption and the absolute lowest heart disease rate of any country in the world. He just threw that out of his study. It was a cherry-picked. Imagine that, corruption in a scientific study. Right after that study came out, the Minnesota Coronary Experiment. That was 1968 to 1973. 9,000 patients randomized into two groups. One consumed animal fat, and the other consumed polyunsaturated plant oils, like cottonseed oil. What that study showed, for every 1% drop in cholesterol, there was a 1% increase in mortality. So in the vegetable oil group, yes, their cholesterol dropped, but their mortality went up. They didn't publish that study for 40 years, though. Sydney Heart Diet Study right after that, same thing. LDL went down, but death went up. Multiple studies since then have showed the same thing. Here's a study from 1966, familial hypercholesterolemia. So this is where there's a genetic mutation that causes the cholesterol to be extremely high in these family groups. This study was produced in 1966 by William Harlan. Quote, our study provides no evidence that familial hypercholesterolemia appreciably shortens the life of affected individuals, either male or female. On the contrary, They show that high levels of serum cholesterol are clearly compatible with survival into the 7th and 8th decades. That's 1966 in the Journal of Medicine by Harlan, William Harlan. Here's another study, the British Medical Journal, 2001. The name of the study is Mortality Over Two Centuries in Large Pedigree with Familial Hypercholesterolemia, Family Tree Mortality Study. So they look back into the 1800s and 1900s, follow these family trees of these folks with the genetic high cholesterol levels. The conclusion, people in the first generations of our pedigree reached old age. Hypercholesterolemia may have conferred a survival advantage when infectious disease was present. So the higher the cholesterol, the better protection you had against infectious disease. Here's another study, Journal of American Heart Association 2014, showed that the higher your cholesterol was, the less cancer you had. Here's another study. This is the Lancet 2001, Cholesterol and All-Cause Mortality in the Elderly People from the Honolulu Heart Program, a cohort study. That's by Schatz, S-C-H-A-T-Z. Conclusion, our data accord with previous findings of increased mortality in elderly people with low cholesterol and show that long-term persistence of low cholesterol concentration actually increases the risk of death. The exact opposite of what people think. Here's another study, January 2013, British Medical Journal. This looked at eggs, which have saturated fat. You know, people are still, to this day, ordering egg white omelets. Every time I'm somewhere and I hear someone order that, I just want to go over and show them this study. This is from Yin Rong, R-O-N-G. Conclusion, this meta-analysis identified no significant association between egg consumption and the risk of coronary heart disease or stroke. Here's another one, Annals of Nutrition Metabolism, 2009. Dietary fat and coronary heart disease, summary of evidence from prospective cohort and randomized controlled trials. So again, a summary of all these previous randomized controlled trials. Here's a conclusion. Intake of total fat was not significantly associated with coronary events or mortality. Intake of saturated fat, animal fat, was not significantly associated with coronary events or mortality. And fatal heart disease was not reduced by low-fat diets. I could go on and on. I have multiple other studies in front of me, like the British Medical Journal from 2016. It was another review study, and it showed the same thing. Longevity, all-cause mortality. The higher the cholesterol in these elderly folks, the longer they lived and the healthier they lived. Okay. If this wasn't such a persistent myth that I have to deal with every single day in my clinic, I wouldn't have to read through all these studies, but trying to overcome that misconception, this theory that Ansel Keys started in 1959, I mean, it's tough. So, why don't we jump into, I know we want to go back to labeling, we want to talk about the cow cake stuff, but since I'm talking about all this right here, let's just go to the benefits. The benefits of consuming grass-finished beef, we mentioned the omega-3 ratio being high. Could you maybe knock out some of these other benefits that you've discovered?
The Mayo Clinic and research has shown clinical evidence that concludes that a decreased risk of heart disease occurs whenever you increase consumption of CLA, mm-hmm. which is the conjugated linoleic acid,
mm-hmm.
An essential amino acid.
Fatty acid, yep.
Fatty acid. If a person wants to really maximize the nutritionally rich beef, the proteins that they eat, I recommend grass-finished beef, because by doing so, it lowers the LDL and cholesterol levels, the bad cholesterol that you've already mentioned. According to Joe Robinson, founder of Eat Wild, which is eatwild.com, the typical American eats 65 to 70 pounds of beef per year. By switching to grass-finished beef, you will save 16,640 calories per year. So people that are looking at their weight, that they want to stay trim, and they want a nutritionally rich protein, then the authorities recommend a grass-finished diet, even though they don't know what grass finished is all about, and that's why I'm here, because that's where it's what's really important.
Right, we need to nail that label.
Two times the amount of lutein and beta carotene mm-hmm. in grass finished mm-hmm. over grain fed and grass fed.
Yep.
Six times the amount of omega 6 over grain fed. Three times the amount of omega.
Reverse that. Yeah.
Reverse that. There is six times the amount of omega-3 in grass-finished beef over grain-fed.
Yeah.
There is three times as much omega-3 in grass-finished over grass-fed.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the point I want to drive home, the nutritional quality and the amounts of nutrients in this grass-finished beef. I mean, let thy food be thy medicine. I mean, your cells are constantly dying, and you're recycling, you're regenerating, making new ones all the time. Why are we degenerating so severely and so early in life? Blue Cross Blue Shield study in 2019, the average millennial at age 27, they start to degenerate. The number of pharmaceuticals that these 20 and 30 and 40-year-olds are on, it's unbelievable. But the quality of the nutrients going in the mouth, let thy food be thy medicine. And that's exactly what Jeffrey's pointing out here. These nutrient content levels so much higher and more robust and diverse in a cow eating what God intended for it to eat.
One that I didn't mention a minute ago is the support, the supporting of normal blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of difference there also.
Yep.
If we can, I'm ready to switch to the labeling, because I know people, most folks have to go to a meat case and buy meat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be able to bring that clarity to your audience, Ben.
Let's do it.
Grass-fed beef is not a USDA-regulated term.
That's good to know.
Yes.
It's a wild, wild west out there.
January the 12th. 2016, the AMS, which is the American Marketing Service of USDA, that's where they actually, what they did, they dropped the grass-fed official term, and it leaves it now open to interpretation.
Mm.
With the removal of the USDA term, any beef product can be labeled grass-fed, according to USDA and the American Marketing Service.
Mm.
So when buying non-reference grass-fed beef or grass-finished beef or grass-fed beef, there are some safeguards. You can look for a particular stamp on the meat that's in the freezer case, and it would be AGA, and that's the American Grass-Fed Association. Now, they are grass-fed, so not necessarily grass-finished. So that means that from they're raised on grass in the pasture with the mother cow.
Still nursing on their mama, chewing on some grass.
Up until around 500 pounds, mm-hmm. and then for the remainder of their life, they can be supplemented with grain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that animal is legitimately eligible under the AGA, American Grass-Fed Association, to have the stamp of approval, yep. grass-fed.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me off air, I think it's 70% maybe of our beef is coming from overseas?
Today, 70% of all grass-fed,
okay,
not grass-finished, 70% of all grass-fed beef labeled is imported. And because of the labeling fiasco that we've got into, as long as it's processed in the United States, it can be stamped product of the USA. So 70% of all grass-fed meat that's in the counter today is imported. Only 10th and of the grass-fed, grass-finished beef in the United States, less than 10% is grass-finished. Because grass-finished is extremely difficult to do.
Yeah.
And even more so in West Texas.
Yeah. And boy, are we blessed to be in West Texas where there are folks doing it the right way. Let's get into that a little bit. I mean, I've got a number of cattlemen that are patients of mine, friends of mine, even family. So talk a little bit about how do you do this in West Texas when it's dry, when it's wintertime, and thing, you know, we had our hard freeze a week or two ago and everything's turning brown. How do you keep from using cow cake, the little cubes of supplemental food, corn, cottonseed, and different things. Talk to us about that on a practical standpoint. How do you do that? How does a producer maybe wanting to shift into more what you're doing, how do you accomplish it?
Well, ranchers don't necessarily want to be farmers.
I know that. They're almost insulted if you call them a farmer. No, I'm no farmer. And I'm a rancher.
I was introduced to a magazine years ago called the Stockman Grass Farmer. The editor then was the founder. His name was Alan Nations. He wrote several books. Some of his students down through the years was Gabe Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He's real popular
today.
I've
had him on the show before. Yeah.
But Alan Nations was the father of all of this, and he's the one that I studied under. My operation is to where that you have to graze legumes in the wintertime. Or ryegrass, that you can irrigate, and so that's pretty restrictive to become to have grass finished beef because you have dry grass, but you got to have something to heat those animals up, and that's whenever we've always fed cow cake,
right?
And the majority of men will say, I don't feed very much cake, but they feed every day. Most of them feed every day in the hard winter months. They have to.
Yeah.
The only way that animal can stay warm and healthy and lactate for the calves. And so I've worked for years to try to develop a program to where that I can feed cured grass, hay, in the wintertime, and alfalfa. And so... the animals that I'll be soon slaughtering, they were fattened out on clown grass. Clown grass is it's from the Serengeti Plains of Africa, has a root system that goes down 11 feet. In my opinion, is superior over all the old world blue stems, Bedal and all. Why? Because it's so tough, and I have some dry land clown, and then I have irrigated clown, and so I'm blessed to have a small dry land assisted farm to where that I can grow those products or grow that forage for my animals. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a lot of work. It takes longer to produce a grass finished carcass than it does a grass fed carcass. It takes longer, much longer than a grain fed. Grain fed is 18 to 20 months. Grass fed, you can get them 24, 28 months. Grass finished, you're going to be 26 to 34 months before they're finally finished out with 3/8 of an inch of back fat on them. And so it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs more. And so by the time I finally sell an animal, I know him pretty well because he's been on my farm a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's those husbandry practices are, you have to be real careful. I mean, I try. I've done everything I can. My land is not certified organic, and we won't get into that because that's another
labeling deal.
A can of worms that is not very accurate either. Mm-hmm. It takes 3 years to become organic. Now, I'm not, for people that are organic, then really do it right, I commend them highly.
Mm-hmm.
For people that are devoted to grass-fed beef, I understand their program. In West Texas, that's the way, for the majority of ranchers that want to get into this type of program, that's what they have to do.
Yeah.
Unless they have some irrigated ground that can grow some alfalfa and then graze that alfalfa after frost. Or if they can graze maybe wheat, I prefer to graze rye because of the nutritional differences,
mm-hmm.
From a grass-fed beef.
And then what kind of legumes? You mentioned legumes. So are we talking like peas? And
you can go peas. And alfalfa primarily in this part of the country.
Okay.
And so peas, and then you can also, a lot of people will graze turnips. And right now, as a rotational crop, and for a cover crop, people are doing turnips. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good place to winter your mama cows and those calves to be able to stay on a grass-finished program.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know ranchers want to just grow cows, but if a cow eats plants, eats grass, then you kind of have to be a grass farmer, too, or some kind of farmer to grow this feed to really have an operation like what you're talking about.
That's right.
So, like you said, I mean, it takes time to get there. It takes some investment. You got to have the right setup. Probably people can't just switch right away. And so for those that are supplementing with the cow cake, cubes, range cubes, talk a little bit about that. You were mentioning about a veterinarian friend of yours you're talking to about what if someone, you know, a cow's got to eat some grain-based stuff, you know, and then maybe you pull them off of it. But how long does it take to for this fat to change omega-3 to omega-6 or back to omega-3?
Well, see, I started out as a grain-fed producer. And then as I began to think, because I had some training at university in human anatomy physiology, I said, wait a minute. Now, we have a calf that's raised on its mom, and she's been eating cow cake and grain all her life. And there he is, you know, partaking of that milk. And then anytime you feed cow cake out there, well, the calves are going to be eating it too. And then, but let's talk about a grass-fed operation whenever those cows don't get any grain, no cow cake, the calves don't get any cake, no grain. That's grass-finished. But if that animal has had grain or cow cake until he's weaned, I asked my veterinarian, I said, how long does it take that 500-pound weaned calf to convert all of that omega-6 in his body to a healthy, nutritional level of omega-3? And being a veterinarian for over 20 years, he scratched his head and he looked at me and he said, Jeffrey, that animal can't live long enough to convert that omega-6 to a healthy level of omega-3.
Mm.
That was an eye-opener for me, and I went home and I talked with my Glenda, and I said, we're going to have to do something about our program because I want it to be the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we've worked and finally have irrigated alfalfa that we bale, and mm-hmm. we can feed our animals in the wintertime. And then as soon as frost hits and we're to be safe to keep my cattle from bloating, well, then I'll be able to graze. I didn't cut my hay, the alfalfa, the very last time that I could have.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did, now I have acreage of alfalfa after the freeze that they won't bloat on. I'll be able to graze my mama cows and those calves and even the fats. I'll be able to graze them on that legume.
Mm-hmm.
And they will get some forbs, you know, the right. waxy leaf shrubs, but mostly it's going to be the alfalfa and me feeding them good cured Klein grass hay.
Yeah.
And you can supplement with, legally, you can supplement with sugar cane molasses if you can find it.
Mm, right.
And that's what I've done for many years in my grass fed program, was supplement with sugar cane molasses. And it actually qualifies as a grain.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you for all you're doing to produce high quality food is medicine, as I say. And congratulations on your health too.
Well, thank you.
We didn't get into that, but our goal at Veritas is to educate people on giving their body what it needs. And the body's way smarter than I am or any other doctor is. And that's why we try to pound this home to people. Doctors can't cure you. Doctors can only treat symptoms. Standard of care uses pharmaceuticals to treat symptoms. High blood sugar is a symptom. High blood pressure is a symptom. Migraine headaches are a symptom. PCOS is a symptom. Rheumatoid arthritis, ulcerative colitis. You go right down the list of quote-unquote diseases. They're symptoms of inflammation. And inflammation's almost always coming from our diet and lifestyle choices. And obviously food's a big part of that. So there is no way that Veritas Medical providers can cure somebody, and there's no way a conventional doctor can cure you either. All we can do is treat symptoms nutraceutically or pharmaceutically. You're responsible. You're in charge of your health. We're trying to equip you with the knowledge and then connect you with the resources. I'll give a little plug to the Merck. You know, it's some unique products in there. I had a gentleman, we'll have to replay this interview sometime. We have coffee. It's not from West Texas. I don't think anyone grows coffee here. But we have long Purity Coffee. Well, this guy that developed Purity Coffee, he sold a tech company for $1 gazillion. His wife drank coffee every day, and she was sick, and he knew it was the coffee making her sick. He was an Englishman, and he drank tea. He tried to convince her to switch to tea, and she wouldn't do it. So he took all these profits from this sale of his tech company, and he hired a team of scientists from around the world to study the whole process of growing coffee beans, from the soil to the climate and the pH, all the way through roasting and picking it, all of it, to come up with this really nutritiously dense coffee bean. It has tons of medicinal properties to it. We've got a maple syrup there that comes from a forest in Wisconsin. Most maple syrup's coming out of a maple tree farm, which there's good, better, and best. That's better, maple tree farm syrup's better than Aunt Jemima high fructose corn syrup with maple syrup flavoring. But you get to a wild forest where it's multiple different saps from multiple different trees, not just maple trees, and it's blended together. It's a high nutrient content food. And that's what we're talking about with this beef also. You want high nutrient density in your food. And then you have a whole lot better odds of avoiding Alzheimer's, avoiding heart disease, avoiding cancer, avoiding autoimmune, avoiding COVID and influenza and all these infectious diseases. It's incredible, all this 100 years of new diseases that we're up against. And our great-great-grandparents didn't have to face it because they were all eating grass-finished beef, high-quality butter, raw milk, nutrient-dense food, vine-ripened, local, all that. So thank you, Jeffrey. Again, Jeffrey didn't come to sell beef. We didn't even talk about it beforehand. He wanted to educate y'all. He's passionate about this. But I do want to support him and other producers. If you're a producer, give us a ring at the Merck or go to veritasmedical.com and email us through the website. We'd be happy to talk to you and to help promote your operation. And our goal is to sell out every producer in West Texas sold out directly to consumer. It's better for the producer. They get a premium price, but it's even better for the consumer. They get a premium price too. It's a win-win. You take out the middleman. You get a high-quality, nutrient-dense product that's going to benefit your health, benefit your neighbor, the producer, and benefit your pocketbook. It's a win-win-win. When we take the love of money out of it, and we take the self-centeredness out of it, and we steward creation God's way, and we love our neighbor like Jesus commanded, love God, love your neighbor. And pretty much that's it.
Amen.
Things will flow like they're supposed to.
That's great.
So thank you for being part of that.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
All right. Contact information one more time.
Jeffrey Taylor, 806-543-9826. Taylor's Natural Beef.
All right. There you go, folks. And if this is all new to you and it's blowing your mind that high cholesterol and saturated fat, done the right way, doesn't cause heart attacks, you can go on veritasmedical.com. Go to the resource page. The video archive page is under that resource tab. And go listen to the first Tuesday talk about cholesterol and saturated fat and statins. Chris Kenobi, I interviewed him a couple years ago. That'll be on the podcast archive page. I think it's under the most popular tab on the podcast archive page. Chris Kenobi did a deep dive on this saturated fat and heart disease, and he lays out a very strong case for the seed oils as being the main driver of inflammation, omega-6 rich rancid seed oils, the cottonseed, soybean oil, canola, all that. So go check out Chris Kenobi's interview too. Get educated so that you can be the cure. All right, Wade, thank you for having us. We'll be back next week with another great show.
Happy Thanksgiving to both of you, and we'll see you back here next week on VeritasMedical.com. You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. For archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health, look to VeritasMedical.com.